a nice conference, a nice setup, and so this is my first time here. I can, I'm truly impressed. I don't have to say that very much, but so it's really nice to be here. And so what I'm going to talk about is confinement deconfinement in ADS-CFT. So the nature of this topic is going to be a little technical because I think that conceptually we more or less agree on what is going on. So what I'm going to do essentially is, so here's my outline. So I'm going to briefly mention what has already been said many times, which is how unequal force thermodynamics can be understood from type 2B superstrings. Then I'm going to briefly mention the Hawking phase phase transition and its interpretation as a confinement deconfinement phase transition, which is due to Witten. Okay. Then I'm going to talk a little bit about this hardware model, which I was an opponent of for a long time, but right now I think it really does capture some things that are very useful. So I will describe the Hawking phase transition in that context as well, which is due to Chris Herzog, who's in the audience. So I will comment on that. And so then I will talk about a background that is really one of the preferred background for string theories, at least more formally minded people, which is the Gleon of Strassler background. So it's a very famous thing. So I will not go into a lot of detail, but this is sort of the thing that one wants to see actually working. So this is sort of the goal of this talk. So I will discuss the background, then I will discuss the construction of a black hole in a background that is not precisely Gleon of Strassler, but I think it's close enough for our purpose. So I will, then the rest is fairly preliminary, but I will discuss the drag force in this new background, which contains a black hole. I will discuss also the Hawking phase phase transition, and I will conclude with my wish list, of course. So N equal 4 thermodynamics from non-extremal discrete grains, it was actually known before ADS-CFT, in fact. So it was sort of the main motivation for understanding ADS-CFT, the fact that it was mainly developed by Clevon of Gubser and other collaborators. So, but essentially, by just looking at properties of non-extremal discrete grains in this case, it was roughly argued that this must have something to do with N equal 4. That was like a couple of years before the Mandel-Senner conjecture. And this is roughly the evidence. There's a little bit more. There's a little bit more of discussion about this, and there's a scattering. There's some other computation, but I think that the main evidence is this: that if you compute the entropy of the non-extremal discrete grain, and you translate your quantities from string theory, which, I mean, these are not, et cetera, into gauge theory quantities, according to the dictionary that we more or less have seen many times, you get a black hole entropy, which is similar to the energy of free SUN or N super young melts. And of course, there was this famous or infamous three quarters. But even that was really nicely understood as okay, so in general, we have this interpolating function that goes between the strong coupled limit of the theory and the weakly coupled. So this, I think, is really sort of the step number zero in trying to understand thermodynamics and in this context of duality. So then after the Mandel-Senner conjecture was already formulated, we then reinterpret something that was understood by Hawking and Page, which is if you're trying, from the GR point of view, if you're trying to do some kind of quantum gravity in some semi-classical regime, what you want to do is compare the action of different configurations, all of them having the same asymptotics. And what Hawking and Page did for asymptotically ADS-5, they did for asymptotically ADS-4, but it can be extended to any dimension, is that essentially I will discuss it here, but essentially there are two regimes depending on the temperature, and at low temperatures, the action that dominates the saddle point is just ADS, and at high temperature, the action that dominates the subtle quantum approximation is really the black hole. Okay, so we then redid this calculation and tried to interpret it as a confinement, the confinement phase transition. All the physics, I will not make a lot of emphasis on the physics because I think it's fairly clear, but these are the caveats that are important here, that you're at infinite n if you're talking about a field theory. And even though it's a conformal field theory, you are on a strict versus one, and therefore you can have a transition in that case. But let me walk you through the technical steps. There are just a couple of steps here, which you will see again and again, and they will become a lot more complicated in other backgrounds, but I want the physics and the physics to be very clear. So what you want to do, you want to compare two gravitational actions, but you want to make sure that you're comparing the same thing. So what you do is you fix, there's an R, which here I call R max, at which you want the physical temperature, which is the temperature, if you wish, in this case, it's better defined. The temperature at the horizon times the square root of U00 has to be equal for the two solutions, and then you compare them. The comparison is just, in the case of gravity with a cosmological constant, which is the effective theory that we use in ADS-CFT, it boils down to evaluating some volume. Each volume in itself has a divergence, but what you're interested is in the difference, and that turns out to be fine. Okay. And here you can see that so this I, which is the difference between the black hole action and the ADS action, changes sign for some value of the radius of the horizon, which is connected to the temperature. And this is what allows you to say, yes, there is a transition. There is one action that dominates at some temperature, and another action that dominates at a different temperature. OK, you can go ahead in this method and compute the entropy, and you see that it jumps from n to the 0 to n squared. OK, but as I said, mostly this is in the context of n equal 4 on this space and infinite n. So, but of course, there was a subtlety, which not a subtlety, but there's a fact that if you try to do Wiggins analysis for ADS in pump patch, you wouldn't see a phase transition. You see that there's only one phase, and that it's always dominating, and it's the black hole. And it's of course more or less what we expect for a conformal theory in our form. But
just a question. There was a recent paper by Sean Hartnell called Tim Holloway, and they say that on a street crosses one decoupling, there is another phase which is not
good.
Comment on that?
So I will not comment on that because So that paper I haven't studied very carefully. The work I'm more familiar with is Mingwala, Offer, etc., which is the one I understand. That one I really do not profile. So let me. I have to make a public apology here to the hard world. I have given a hard time to Son and Misha in the past. But essentially, so there's a model in ADS-CFT that is being used a lot, and I think. So it's this Hubble model. And the model is essentially ADS, but you cut it off for absolutely no reason. Well, for some reason, but you cut it off. and it's a hard cut off. It doesn't solve any equation of Einstein equation at that point. There's no jump condition. So it's kind of very rude. And your first reaction is, this cannot be right. But then there's a number of things that go to the favor of that model. So in particular, if you study rigorously what are the conditions that a supergravity background has to have in order to be dual to a confinement theory, then you very quickly realize that it must be a geometry such that there's some kind of wall, more or less. There's some kind of wall in ADS. And this is sort of a motivation number one towards this model, at least from my point of view. But then you can do even more. So you can try to use this model in a slightly sophisticated version. Basically, you want to compute a string theory amplitude, let's say, on ADS 5 versus 5, and you start off. And you really don't know how to do it, but you say, OK, here's the string theory amplitude on flat space. And then I'm going to convolute it with the wave function of ADS 5 with this cutoff. And miraculously, what you get is really that you are able then, under this approximation, to explain how exponentially decaying Venetian amplitude becomes something with power law behavior, which is what we expect for in deep inelastic scattering. So I think that this is another piece of evidence that is very strong in favor of this model. Then of course you can just go ahead as Brodsky and Terramon did and many other people and try to compute the hadron spectrum. And it's fairly well described by this model. So, and of course you can have variation of this model like KBS, QCD, etc. So this is a model that, in spite of being not completely well defined from the string theory point of view, it does capture a lot of key features of confining backgrounds in ABS CFT. So what Chris Herzog did mainly, it did was essentially to reproduce this calculation here of Whedon, but in the case of ADS in Poincaré coordinates with the cutoff. So there's some cutoff scale which I call here Z0, and then CH is the position of the horizon. So you describe this cutoff ADS versus an ADS with the horizon, and you compare the actions, and then you can see roughly that for some conditions of that cutoff, which is related to lambda QCD, if you wish, there is a possibility of faint transition. And there is a possibility of because you can think of changing this is the temperature. So you can think of changing the temperature, and therefore you will have a phase transition precisely at that time. So this is the calculation. So what I did with my collaborators here, Ion, Boshi, Filio, and Braga, was essentially to look at that calculation and be a little bit more formal and do it using randomization, a holographic randomization. Write all the contrary terms, make sure that each action by itself is finite, which is useful for thermodynamics, etc. But that you can do, and at the end of the day, you just reproduce Chris' result. Moreover, you can then go ahead and try to see if the entropy is really jumping by n squared degrees of freedom, and you can do that as well. So what you need to do, which is slightly non-trivial, is to relate this cutoff here, this is zero, to the number of to n essentially, because it's not completely clear. So that part is a little loose, but you can say, okay, so I don't know exactly what this model is, but I can think of this model as being perhaps a simplification of the Kleonov-Strasser model, in which I do have at the end of the space, which I will show, at the end of the space you have a tree sphere. So somehow a contribution to the Newton's constant of that part would be Z0 to the cube, and then I have two other directions, so at the end I get a relationship between Z0, R, and Newton's constant. This is, of course, the n-dimensional Newton's constant, which is independent of n. And then I have to use a relationship between this is string tension and Z0, which was also known by this kind of Wilson loop calculation of quantum vector potential. And then I also need to know, and I do know thanks to Michael Pepper, that the square root of the string tension is related to Gn. So with all those ingredients, you put them together and you get precisely what you expect, that there is a phase transition. There is a critical temperature at which it happens, which was computed by Chris, and that the entropy jumps from n to the 0 to n squared degrees of freedom. And again, so this part is easy to do now, because if you do holographic randomization, then each action is finite and well-defined independently. So this is essentially, as I said, this is a point model. It's somehow well-motivated. It gives you the right physics, but what you really, but there are still some problems. So let me highlight the problems before I go to the actual calculation. So one of the problems is that there's a question of, was there a question?
So why in the interface the string tension with G?
I think it's used for a rent. So let me highlight a couple of problems. So one problem is consistent reduction. So it's a bit of a formality, if you wish, but it's an important problem. So not anything that you can write a five-dimension makes sense from the 10-dimensional point of view. And that is something that you really have to make sure. If you're looking at some five-dimensional theory and you want to make sure that it is a description of something that lives in 10 dimensions, you have to make sure that you reduce that theory from a 10-dimensional theory. So this is a subtle point, but it's a very important point. I have to stress it. So in fact, if you have a solution in 10 dimensions, you will always have a solution in 5 dimensions, but you might have things in 5 dimensions that have nothing to do with 10-dimensional theory. So this is a problem that happens in anything that has to do with the conifold, for example. So the conifold is not something that I can do a consistent truncation on easily. Okay, and you can prove that there is no consistent truncation.
So is a consistent truncation the conifold to a five-dimensional gravity, and has been derived and used?
Okay. So I object. I think that there is no super five-dimensional supergravity coming from the conifold. That is, so there's this very general result of Pope, which I think is just. But we can discuss that any time. But I think the consistent.
An explicit example where we did all the computations.
As I said, you can reduce a solution. There's no objection to that, and I'm objecting to reducing a theory. That's a different. Okay, so another thing that is not clear from this state model is that you have the role of free form. So the action that you start with is an action that contains the Ricci scalar and also the cosmological constant, which comes from the five form in 10 dimensions. But as we know in Klebanov Strassler and in Maldesen and Nunez, a key role is played by the free form. So it's really important to understand how that plays out in the five dimensional context. And also, if we have some concrete solutions, then why not do that? Let me mention briefly what the Klebanov-Strassler background is. So it's a supergravity background of type 2b, and so it's conjectured to be dual to n equal 1 supersymmetric SUN plus n times SUN gauge theory. So it has a lot of really good features. It incorporates the logarithmic running of gauge couplings, the theory of confines in the infrared, there's a chiral symmetry breaking, you can see the instant time effects very clearly. There's an explicit metric, an explicit supergravity background, which contains the metric, NSNS3 form, and these are Ramon 3 and 5 form, and the dilaton is constant. But roughly, if you don't want to be very, very specific about it, it's essentially the result of taking, instead of R6, which gives you a ADS5 plus S5, taking instead of R6, the six-dimensional space, you take something that is the conifold rather than the form conifold, which is almost like it's a six-dimensional space. So you can think of this as the angular part, and then this is the radial part. But at the end, you have some three sphere with finite area. So that's roughly what you want to do. But this is not exactly. So this solution is known, as I said, it's written explicitly. My interest here is to understand how to put temperature in a background like that. So to do that, I need to go ahead and generalize the metric, generalize the form, try to find equation for that. So let me mention here that so a lot of this is actually there are many people who have contributed. So Alex had this idea of trying to regularize Klebanov saving using finite temperature. Then there was more work by these people, and then there's a solution here that I will discuss briefly and more recently. So in collaboration with Cesar Ferrero Escalante, who's in the audience, we constructed numerically a solution to this system that we claim is really a black hole. So let me tell you essentially what we did before. So this part is, so I think that culturally for a lot of string theories, there's this aversion to numerical things, but at some point we have no escape. That's what we have to do. So essentially, I wrote the metric, and the metric contained four functions. Then I have some modern functions. And one thing that we did to calibrate the method was once we have the system, there are many known solutions to this system, which is a good thing. So there are at least, I have listed here six, but there are at least like eight solutions that I can write. They are known analytically. And I can just, first of all, reproduce all of them numerically. And I did that. And this is essentially what the graphs are. So this is some of the solution, not all of them. So this Calabi-Yau is some deformation of the conifold, which is here. non-extreme of D3 grains, there's some singular cleon of saline, there's cleon of saline. So all these solutions I can reproduce, and this is my accuracy, which I measure like this, the difference of the analytic and the numerical solution. So my zero here is 10 to the minus 9, and I can see that they are all well in that they're well under control. So I'm, with my ansatz, I reproduce all known analytic solutions.
What's the u-axis?
U is the radial coordinate. U is the radial coordinate, and here I have this guy. So my coordinates are here. This is my radial coordinate. Okay.
So u equals 0 is
good.
Inside or outside?
U equals 0 is outside. Is this is like Z in ADS-CFT. This is like Z. So the boundary is at u equals 0. Okay. The UV, if you wish. Okay. So I reproduce all these solutions with nice accuracy. Then there's a constraint in all the system because they come from a gravitational action that satisfies the constraint. So I verify again that for all the solutions that I obtain and reproduce, this is the constraint, by the way. I'm really well under what I consider my zero. So let me make a comment because I have to explain. I want to explain this just for once. So there were some solutions that were known, and they were known in some perturbation theory. But this is a general thing that I want to highlight because I want to highlight so that people understand I'm not just being masochistic and finding this numerical solution. There's really no way to do anything in supergravity if you do not have the full thing. Any perturbation theory in gravity will have a restrictive range in the radial direction. Because this is your perturbation theory, you write that your metric is going to be like that, so therefore you have to make sure that this is always smaller for all values of the radius. And if you do this for a Schwarzschild, you do your linearized equation, you do get this. And you might say, okay, I have the Schwarzschild metric, but that is not true. This metric is only valid when R is a lot greater than M. If you want to go back, you're breaking the perturbation theory. So you have to stop and say my metric is like this only in this regime. And you can rewrite this as the temperature being very, very, this dimensionless combination being very large. And similarly, there was one solution. This is Gutzer-Herzog, Cleonov, and Seylig. Seylig found an asymptotic solution, a perturbative solution to the system. But that solution is, of course, bounded because it's just this general principle here. So there is some U critical after which terms that you had in your original ansatz are going to be of the same order, and you should not go there. And in fact, in the paper there's a little bit more detail about that, about what might happen if you nevertheless go to that regime. So finding a solution for all radii, for all values of the radii is important, and that has to be done numerically. Okay, so once I start finding solutions, numerical solutions, how do I verify that yes, I'm talking about a black hole? So there are more sophisticated methods to discuss this, and I could discuss them privately or large. But one very simple thing is to consider geodesics. In this case, I'm talking about a massive geodesic. And look at the asymptotic time and the proper time from some point when you send the geodesic to the horizon. And obviously, what you expect is that the proper time will be finite, and then the asymptotic time will be infinite. Okay. So now, because we're doing things numerically, you have to understand or you have to develop some criterion for what is infinite and what is finite. But that I will show you that we did to at least a satisfactory level. Then, of course, you want to make sure that your method is complete. And one good thing is that we had many analytic cross-checks. So if we're seeing something numerically, we can put it in the system and then find some other relations. So that, and then we had at our disposal many other non-solutions. So in fact, we found analytic asymptotic behavior for very large in the UV, if you wish, and in the IR, or close to the horizon. So here are a couple of plots for this is the proper time, and this is the asymptotic time. So you need to develop some idea of how close to the horizon you are, and that we also develop. It's not very difficult. You look at the form of the horizon for D3 grains, non-extreme D3 grains, and that serves as a model. But essentially, so I can see that. So I don't remember in this case, but around this point, I'm going to be like 90% close to the horizon in some measure that you can define. And you can see that the proper time really is not changing while the syntotic time is still wrong. And that, of course, you do many times for many solutions until you're convinced that this is completely stable. Okay. So another property that I want of my solution is that it has a finite area of the horizon. Okay. So I look at the metric and I compute the area of the horizon and I get this kind of combination. But this is very good, and this actually was really a very nice point of this calculation, that in this card, in this parametrization, the non-streamer parameter, which you might think of as some kind of temperature, the equation for it is just this linear equation. So then you immediately said, okay, for this to be finite, then I need the asymptotic of x on z and y to satisfy this equation, be linear as well, and kill this term. Otherwise, I will have either infinite area or zero area. But to have constant area, I have to have this. And that fixes the asymptotic of two of your metrics of two of your metric entries immediately. Okay. And again, you can so you go to your solution or to the solutions that you believe are black holes, and you compute this, and you see that again, the area is going to a constant. So what else? And again, you can develop some series expansion of this solution. So this is for very high temperature. Temperature is this parameter A, as I explained. Here. So I can look at the series, and I can see that they precisely satisfy this criterion. I can look at the close to the other regime. So this would be like the Clebanov sidings of asymptotic, and I find precisely the kind of asymptotic that I expect. So I have to mention that this form of the metric of the asymptotic is precisely that of the non-streamer diffeo ring. So near the horizon, the solution is really very close to a non-streamer diffeo ring, and it really has not a lot of wiggle room, because as I said, asymptotically it has to go like that. And then in the other end, we find something that is fairly similar to Clebanov's setting. Okay, so once we have the solution, one of the things that we can do is to consider drag force. So drag force is something that was talked about here a lot, so I will not, I don't have a lot to say, other than for this background, we can compute this B should be mu, according to all the discussion here, and we can compute that for a set of parameters. A is roughly my temperature, but there's some subtleties there that I am aware of. So it's not really the temperature, but it's very close to being the definition of temperature. So I can compute it, and I can see that, so I will make some comments, but I can see immediately that there's some kind of velocity dependence in the relativistic regime. So this is a table that contains all the parameters. So as I said, the main thing that I can see for drag force in this background is that there is indeed some velocity dependence in the relativistic region. And so we can compute, because we know the asymptotic form of the solution in the UV and the IR.
Somehow not all curves go up.
Yes, not all curves go up. So I don't know. Yeah, so. Why is that strange?
That's the relativistic part.
I'll ask you some more, because I really don't understand really why some go up and some go down. It's not really universal.
What is your string doing
on the dimensions here?
No. This is a 10-dimensional theory. In this theory, I have a string moving. So with the typical answer, so vt times some other function, and then it moves, and I find the momentum. I look whether the momentum is, so the wall shape momentum is proportional to the momentum of the string, and I look at that equation.
Where is the conical? Where is?
Where is
the string on the conical?
In the conical, I have, so it depends only on the radial direction. So everything else, so the bending, you're asking about the bending, right? So the bending, it's constant in most of the conical except the radius.
How do you check that the position where you put the string satisfies the equation dimension? You can do that numerically given your...
Uh-oh. No, I don't think I need to do that numerical, because it would be a bunch of angles, and the angles I know exactly. So all the function, all my non-trivialities in functions of the radius.
I probably don't agree with that later.
Okay. So what's that? We have this. So from here, I can see certain things. I can see the temperature square dependence modulo, understanding precisely what is temperature in this background in the non-relativistic regime, which is you get this formula, and then for the relativistic. So it is a good thing that this goes to a constant, a finite constant. But still, as I said, there's some dependence in velocity that we don't understand yet. So finally, I can just, again, this is very preliminary, but I can explain roughly how to compute whether there's a phase transition, Hawking phase kind of phase transition here. And so what we have to do, I have already explained. So first, I have to make sure that I'm comparing things that have the same temperature at the cutoff sort of a scale. This is, as I said, this is sort of a lowbrow way to do it, but this works. And so I have to relay, and I'm working in different coordinates, but it's also clear how to relate the coordinates, because in the UV, they are all, it's easy to connect one to the other. Then I'm comparing the two actions, the Clairon of Strassler and the black hole action. And so this coefficient here comes from making sure that they both have the same temperature, the black hole temperature factors out. And so I do not have plots of precisely what's going on with this, but I have plots of what is going on with these actions. Again, as I said, very preliminary, I still need to normalize properly this computation, but what I'm seeing so far is encouraging. So I see, so A, as I said, we should think of A as some kind of temperature, and I can think of, I can see explicitly that as I increase A, the area of the integrand increases, while if I do the similar thing for the parameter that governs the deformation, and in fact we can argue is related to lambda QCD for Clairon of Strassler, it is epsilon, and I can also see that the area under this graph is smaller as I increase grows as I increase epsilon. So this is very preliminary, but I believe. So this already shows what the relevant parameter should be in the phase transition. The jump in the number of degrees of freedom is also guaranteed to be there, because we know the horizon of this solution is precisely the non-extremal D3, and we know the dependence on the degrees of freedom, and then the other solution is roughly like ADS. So I would like to conclude saying that, so this is, as I said, so here we knew more or less what to expect. And it is just hard to compute it, to construct it, but I think it can be done. And I think one should try to think of the full phase space diagram and connections to the weak coupling results, in particular, try to understand things with chemical potential. So what I constructed really was some black hole in the Clairon-Seyler background, which is not Clairon of Strassler, and therefore there are many things I still cannot see, like chiral symmetry breaking and whether that is related, how is that related to the confinement transition. I want to mention also that, one can try to think of introducing fundamental flavor in a back reactive way so that it is contained in the geometry. But more importantly, I want to again emphasize that a lot of the things are, of course, very enlightening, but we should not lose track of the fact that what we really need to solve is really some sort of a string and try to derive this property directly from strings that describe a field theory. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So how do you actually solve your equation? You have these nasty boundary conditions at both ends, right?
Yes. So how do I solve? So I pick a point that is close. I know what I already analytically know what the horizon has to be in order for it to have finite temperature and finite area. So I know what this function has to be asymptotically. So I can try to set that up. And then I look at a point that is relatively close to the horizon, and I shoot in one way, in one direction, and in the direction of the UV. And then I still have to make sure that the that asymptotically I have to change my parameters in a way that I still have a complete metric and satisfy.
So you're doing shooting from two ends in some 5 or 10 dimensional space?
No. All this becomes a one dimensional existing of only the radial direction. Right?
So the number of parameters dials.
The parameters, yes, I have many parameters. I have, but it's really not that many. So I have one too many, according to the discussion that I have had with Alex. So I have A, which is roughly temperature, then I have P, well, or M and N, which are the two numbers of Levenhoff's cluster. Again, there's argument that this is one too many and that I should, but what I did was with 3 parameters.
Is there any way to So this is a model that we should be looking at. There should be a paper coming out soon. The things are much more complicated, but there are pictures that Leo presents actually holds in. And in particular, one of the things that happens in this, which is related to parameters, is there are some operators, very high-dimensional operators that develop a graph. And in fact, you know, this is some of the things. Well, one thing that Leo was mentioning, it's difficult how you identify parameters. So in fact, you can actually identify precisely what are the parameters, and there is no ambiguity in what you call temperature, and there is no issue, what does it mean to... So in your framework, it's not clear that you even stay within the same field, right? Because it's not clear that you keep the strong coupling scale fixed. So
right.
One of the things that can be understood, and it actually requires much, much more work than what you said, is that you can actually keep the scale that shows that there is a consistent thermodynamics. And in fact, in way to do that, we extended the perturbative computations to 2 more orders. So we have up to p to the 6, what you call p squared. We have a solution p to the 6 with everything. And, the interesting feature which occurs also in other gravitational geometries, which is reminiscent plot force that people see on lattice, is that there is a near conformal regime at fairly low temperatures, much lower than you naively expect. So if there is a scale in the theory, naively you expect that there will be a strong deviation from conformality at temperatures afforded that ultraviolet scale. So somehow what happens in all these gauge gravity duals that there is an effective scale that feeds in the thermodynamics, and it's roughly an order of magnitude less. So this is sort of similar, you know, when we plot the plateau from lattice computations, and we see that it's almost conformal, even though in the regime where the strong coupling scale is roughly the temperature, which is an unusual thing, but it appears that it's being reproduced by ABS CFT as well.
All right, so that concludes our afternoon session.